You're listening to a message brought to you by Christian Life Church Hereford. If you would like to find out more about us, go to www.clch.cc.
Thank you very much. So I'm super excited to be asked to speak today. And Andrew said, you've got to pray about what you'd like to speak on the Lord's Prayer. And I have a question, and it immediately came to mind. So I have a brother and a sister who are Catholics, and when I go to Mass with them, they do not say the last two lines of the Lord's Prayer. And usually the Catholics do lots of liturgy. And because my brother and sister are what they call very strict traditional Catholics, they do it in Latin, which is may well end up being the official... It may well end up being the official language in heaven. You never know. I suspect they think it might be. And the Lord's Prayer is just shorter and it doesn't feel finished. JP said that last week. It kind of stops at lead us not into temptation but deliver us from evil. Amen. And I think that they stole the last good bit. And so I love the final declaration of what belongs to God. For yours is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. So the results of my investigations are as follows. These two lines are a type of hymn called a doxology. And for those who don't speak the language of heaven, it comes from the Latin word doxologia, which then comes from two ancient Greek words, doxa, meaning glory, and logia, which is saying. So these hymns are a short expression of the glory of God. And why do the Catholics not include the Lord's Prayer doxology? So it is in Matthew, but it's not in Luke. And the key is that it's not in all of the manuscripts of Matthew that are considered to be the most reliable by Catholics. Now, if you go in and look this up, it is complicated. Boy, oh, like a lot of theology, it is not straightforward. And we have been arguing about it for the last 2,000 years. It's sort of considered a later addition. But good scholarship today tends to think that it was a later addition, but a good addition, because it is found in some of the earliest church documents, such as the Didache. And that's a Greek word for you, meaning teaching. And it comes from about 100 years after Jesus. So it's really the earliest set of praises that were written to him. And it's really nice. You can download it on the internet, and it has some such nice things. So I think we are okay theologically to keep on enjoying it. That is my thanks for you. So the Lord's Prayer doxology is one of a number. Some are found in the Bible, and then some have been written over the last 2,000 years. And all are a welling up of praise to God, speaking out truths about him. And when we use them, we follow in the footsteps of many others wishing to acknowledge who he is. So my first question is it important for us to practice this welling up of praise in our spiritual lives? And Paul expects us to do this corporately. So Ephesians 5, 19 to 20, speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. And then in our personal time, Psalm 103, bless the Lord, O my soul. So King David gives us a command to his soul to praise. Come on, soul, leave your petty concerns and your scattered senses and offer a shout of praise. So we need this life of praise and prayer, I'm sure we'd all agree. And after all, it's often said we are what we eat, but is it not even more true to say that we are what we contemplate? And I guess that this means that we will be at the end of everything when we come and we have no more life in us, the sum of all that we have contemplated across our lives, which I think is a bit of a sobering thought. And what happens to us when we create a lifestyle of praising? When I sit down to spend some time with the Lord, there's a single idea from Bill Johnson in his book, Strengthening Yourself in the Lord, which often comes to mind. And he says that rejoicing, prayer, and thanksgiving attracts heaven, which I think is a bit of a strange phrasing, but he goes on to explain that when we praise and rejoice, we are agreeing with the multitude of saints and heavenly hosts who are also praising God. All of those who've gone before us are praising, and we come into agreement with that. And he says that this makes it a very important tool in our growth as disciples of Jesus and as a way to draw closer to God and to seek his face. And this can just occasionally lead to some very unusual things happening. And I wanted to just ask, could I see a hand in the air for all of those who've ever had a really strange and unusual encounter of the tangible presence of God? Amen. And I wanted to give a quick testimony of my experience of the tangible presence, especially since it's Pentecost. And just talk about how, for me, that tangible presence relates to my praising. So this happened to me 10 years ago, and I had spent the previous 10 years in something called Overeaters Anonymous, which is a strange organization. It's part of the 12-step program for people with addiction, and I've always felt that I have a strange and unusual interest in food, and that this caused me a lot of problems. And so I was in the 12-step program, and the strange thing about addiction, Overeaters Anonymous, is that I am also there with all the people who are who are bulimics and who just don't eat anything. So you can have all sorts of shapes and sizes in Overeaters Anonymous. But after 10 years of trying to work my program really well, I was just really fed up. I had found that the Lord had done some things, but that he really hadn't fixed me, and that however much I thought about it and worked the program, that it wasn't really working. And I just went, oh Lord, you need to fix me. I'm going. I've had enough of this. And I'm just going. What I discovered was, when I thought back to it, actually by saying to the Lord, listen, you've got to fix me because I can't fix myself. That's actually step three of the 12 steps. And so I had, for the very first time, done a really heartfelt step three, which says that I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And so then, about a couple of weeks later, I went on a church course. It was something that my leader at my old church said, oh, listen, you really should go on it, Charlotte. And I thought it was about something, and it turned out to be about something else totally different. And it turned out to be very much about the heart of God and getting into that place where you can experience the heart of God and the things that stop you from getting to that heart of God. And of course, a lot of the discussions there are the sort of things that I would have done in my 12-step program. You know, what about my past and all of those sorts of things. And I spent the first 1.5 days feeling really ticked off because I'd just come out of this place where I'd done a lot of thinking about that. And Lord, you appear to have brought me back into that place. And somebody who was speaking just talked about some of their experiences, which are very much like my experiences of going to boarding school, which is a mixed blessing, may I say. And at that moment, the Lord decided to act. There was a time of prayer, I knelt down, and I felt as though this golden ball was just inside my heart. And I felt that, and I don't know if this means anything to anybody else, but I felt my faith go from my head to my heart. In that moment, God seemed to deal with a lot of the old stuff in my past and a lot of the whole thing about being at boarding school. And now I go back and I occasionally go back and I poke those memories that used to cause me such pain. And actually, they're all gone, or that the emotions behind them seem to have disappeared. I said to myself, gosh, nobody told me that my faith could be like this. There was something about that opening up of myself to God, opening up of my heart. And I went back to my Airbnb that evening, and I put on a bunch of worship music, and I was praising for a number of hours and just thanking the Lord for what he'd done for me. And actually now these particular songs, they feel like they are now a remembering and a retelling of this moment when the divine came down to meet me. And I don't know if you have any particular songs which have a holiness about them to you, but they are kind of, I think, a solid starting point for the development of a lifestyle of praise. So how do we develop a lifestyle of praise? We are what sociologists call a cognitive minority. This means that as followers of Jesus, we are increasingly at odds with our host culture. And in the words of John Mark Comer, who's one of my favourites, it's a bit like a bit of John Mark too, he said that this means that the culture continually inflicts small wounds on our hearts. And I don't know what the wounds are that you collect, but we are carrying around the weights of these collective wounds with us as we go. And we have a spiritual tool for dealing with these wounds. We need to press into more of God. And this pressing in needs to be done on a regular basis, which means that we need some spiritual disciplines. Now, if you have a perfectly decent set of disciplines, you can switch off for this next bit, because I am in absolutely no position to lecture anybody on the quality of their quiet time, I have to say. However, for anyone like me who has room for improvement, I'd love to share a few thoughts on the discipline of praising. So, first, we need to get together as the people of God to praise. We may be a group of people who have been Christians for a long time. I think of this church as having a lot of maturity in that way. And let's face it, we may have heard all the sermons before. But we need to come back to worship with each other and encourage each other week after week. And I would like to say a shout out to the worship team. I asked them if they could deliver us some big praise songs today. And then I discovered they'd all been praising for 2 hours in last night, finishing at 9 p.m. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We need to come back to worship with each other and encourage each other week after week. This is a surrendering of my will to God's purposes. I may have other things that are more important on Sunday morning, but you never know when you are the person that somebody else needs to stand next to that day to uplift and support them. It's so lovely to be able to come together. Just think of all those countries where we couldn't do that. And secondly, we really can't build a decent discipline without some type of quiet time. When we can lift our eyes to God, listen to his voice, we think, we feel, and reflect. And establish this routine has something to do with surrendering my will and my way to God as well. His will is that he wants me to spend time with him and seek his face. And so I need to make time in my day to do that so I can pray and praise. So thinking about praise in my quiet time, how can a doxology be used in praise? So since I've never spent much time with a doxology, beyond finishing up the Lord's Prayer, I thought I would spend some time this week with three different ones and see how I found the Lord using them. So here we go. You have some pictures there. Yes, it's Peter on one side and Timothy on the other. And I hoped you liked the one of Paul. I particularly like the little tuft of hair that they seem to think he had. Who knows? So the first thing I noticed about the first two of these doxologies is that they're in two parts, and this seems to be that quite a few of them seem to have this same structure. The first part is something good about God or the way that he acts, and in the middle one, God will look after me, essentially. And then the second part is then a shout of praise. You are a good, good Father who looks after me, and may I give you glory forever and ever. And I tried to cultivate a little habit, and my little habit is when I have the start of my time of quiet, I try to come into a place of worship, and I usually picture myself standing on my front lawn and shouting out down the hill. I ask that his name be lifted high above Coton and Walford, which are the villages that are directly below me. And Hillary isn't here today, but I wanted to ask her whether she felt that in any way lifted up at about 10 o'clock in the evening, because that's where she lives directly below me. And then I move on to Ross, I guess, after that. And then I say something about my Catholic brothers and sisters would call the glory be, which is glory be to the Father and to the Son. And for those of you who are ex-Anglicans, you might know that. And so this week I tried using one of these doxologies instead, and I found that they needed a little creativity at times. So taking the first one, I have some small understanding myself, as we all do, of, you know, suffering for a little while. And as per my testimony, I really felt the power of being restored as well. So I called this to mind as a thing, as a remembering, and I was able to say to him, be the dominion forever and ever, because I really felt that when I remember with gladness. And as an expression of praise, yeah, and to remember that he will always be in charge and will always stand strong over my suffering. And I also tried to make it a prayer for others as well. So those who I know are suffering a little while, may they be restored and strengthened. So I think that is another way to use a doxology. And then I tried something more like praise. I speak out restoration and strengthening for those who are suffering, Lord. May your dominion be over their lives forever and ever. And I found that quite powerful as well. And I then found the second one to be quite similar. When I got to the bit of my quiet time where I asked God for things, I tried to pray God for his riches, which will supply my needs. And as James said to us a couple of weeks ago, and I really took it away, that the daily bread is the daily bread. You don't get more than you need, Charlotte. So all of my petty worries about what might happen in future. Even though there might have been a little bit of doubt that God will supply every need, I can still say to our God, be glory forever and ever for those times in which you really have brought what I needed, Lord. Thank you. And then I found the third one a little harder. I find myself just thinking about the otherness of God, because it's talking about, you know, is God imminent and in us, or is he great and magnificent? And so I just remember that he's not like me, and he is therefore worthy of honor and praise because he is just not like me. So that is what I have to say today. I have bought some doxologies for people to take away on a piece of paper for those who'd like to give this a go. I've bought a range and put them together. And I'm also going to put them on WhatsApp because I didn't bring a copy for everybody. I didn't know if everybody wanted one, so there is for that. I would also like to say that as I remembered what it was like for God, and you know, we're Pentecost today, remember what it's like to have the goodness of God on my life and to be able to feel that tangibly. If you haven't felt that ever, or if you haven't felt that for a while, if you need some of that, could I just encourage you, now that we're coming towards the end, I would presume in a bit, that you ask somebody if they would pray for you for more of that. I'd be delighted to pray if anybody asks me, but please do ask. You know, we are all here to pray over each other. So could I encourage you to do that if you need that today? Thank you.